Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Chris Chavez joined by Alex Lohr and Mitch Kastoff. This week, we're going to take more of a preview approach with a big weekend ahead. We're going to have the NCAA preview, LA Marathon breakdown, delve into the fields for the NYC half, maybe give a few shout-outs from the European Championships, possibly touch on Alan Webb and Abu Dhabi. And, you know, there's a few other stories out there. But let's get started with the big event of the weekend, which is the NCAA Championships. Mitch, we'll go to you for the first question of the day. What's the race you're looking forward to the most?
Man, I could easily, again, I could just take the easy win here and go with what I presume everyone else is going to be thinking about. But I'm going to, you know me, I'm a wild card. So I'm going to go just for pure curiosity. My men's race is going to be the 3K. Solely because I would, as much as I would hate to see it, I would also love to see Orion just score, I don't know, like 28 points in the 3K or something ridiculous, and just put like five in the top eight or five, you know, maybe five in the top five, or who knows, maybe five in the top four. So that's the race. I'm just curious. I'm not even super concerned about the winner. I'm more concerned about how many bright yellow green O's come across the finish line. And then my women's race, I think I'm still feeling the reverberating effects from last year, and I'm going to go women's 4x4. First of all, it was the greatest end to any race. It was the greatest, maybe the greatest race I've ever seen in person. But the top five teams, Texas, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, A&M, they are all, you got two teams under 330, which, you know, with the it's the end of the meet, but with the adrenaline pumping, who knows how fast it'll go. All the teams are under 333, but what I like about it is that all those teams are in contention for the podium. So right now, some projections have Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, Florida, Texas. Those are all 4x4 points going up there. So don't leave early. Watch the women's 4x4. It's going to end the meet, and hopefully maybe an encore of last year.
And just involving a baton as well, on the men's side, the DMR is going to be another race to watch. We've got seven teams under 930 so far this season. Georgetown, Penn State, Arkansas, Virginia Tech, Duke, Stanford, and Alabama. So that's going to be another one of those races to definitely keep tabs on. But, you know, you mentioned the race that everyone's going to be talking about, the very easy one, and I'll take it. It'll be the miles on both sides. On the men's side, definitely get your popcorn out, because it'll be Chesric, Serratos, Kidder, Julian Oakley, Johnny Gregoric. I don't see Chad Noel on the start list. Oh, no, there he is. Yeah, absolutely. I think it must have been earlier this morning. I saw the hype up video for Christian Serratos that'll be on FlowTrack this week, and I got pretty excited about that. Chesric, I feel like he's quiet, and there's so much hype around Serratos right now. Before it was all question marks. Now it's just all exclamation points over how good this kid is. That, you know, Chesric might pull another one of those moves where it was right before cross country season, 2 years ago now, where he wasn't the favorite and stuns everyone. I don't think it'd be a stunner to see Chesric win, but it would just kind of be, it would be an upset, I would say. Cerratos, Cheserek, Cerratos is the favorite right now. Cheserek and would be an upset. Kidder would be an even bigger upset. And Kidder's got wheels. I mean, I just based off 2 years ago, when I think Kidder, I think 800. And now to see him thrive in the 1500 last year, the mile this year, I'm excited for what this guy could put together during outdoor season. And, you know, Fayetteville is just going to be one stop for that. And then on the women's side, it's just as equally as stacked. I mean, we heard that Leah O'Connor split a very fast mile during the DMR. Colleen Quigley has the fastest so far this year with 4:29. But you can't count out Shelby Houlihan, who I believe was seventh at the Millrose Mile, only losing to pros. And from outdoor to indoor, she's, and even into cross country, she's been able to carry this fitness for months now. Man, if I had to make a pick on both sides, I'm gonna put the happy ending on the men's side and have Cerratos for the win. And then on the women's side, you know, even with this whole coaching situation that's going on, I'll go Quigley. I'll stick with the favorites for both sides. Now, to give more perspective on the team, we'll go to Al.
All right. So I think, first off, Chavez, if Cheserek winning a race is not an upset. I don't think it'll ever be an upset forever. I don't care how many races he's running. If he wins one, I will not be surprised. But the team races are going to kind of go back to some of the events that Mitch mentioned. Because on the men's side, it is a tale of two very different stories at the top. Florida and Oregon. Oregon does not have an athlete in any event under the mile, except for the weight throw. They have no athletes in any events under a mile. But Florida, when you look at them, they have kind of a similar story. They don't have hardly any distance guys. They got Andres Arroyo. They could both score. I think there's been some estimations like around 70-ish points. It's just an awesome storyline there. These two very different programs, two very different demographics. The only thing they have common is that their head coaches both enjoy wearing tracksuits to meets. Florida had a really, really great SEC. I usually don't see Florida having a great conference and NCAA. Maybe they will put it together this year, but in third place ranked right now are the Razorbacks, who will be at home, and they're going to ruffle some feathers here. Especially when it comes to those 4x4s, nothing goes according to plan. I think the Razorbacks are definitely going to lean into those 70 point estimates. I just think that's too much. That's a lot. That's a lot, a lot, a lot. Going into that 3K, I know Oregon's got five guys. Who knows how they're going to sling it across? Who knows how many guys are going to enter? How they're going to try to run the race? If they're going to try to get somebody out there to slow the pace down so some of their guys can just sit and kick and grab a point or two at the end. That's a really interesting Robert Johnson call right there. On the women's side, yes, the Arkansas Razorbacks, they're number one. They're going to be at home. But as Mitch mentioned, that 4x4, all SEC teams. And Georgia is right behind them. Georgia has a couple field event girls. So, you know, I don't know. Field events, it's tough to lean on them because field event athletes never have, you know, there's always somebody who has a bad day. So I would still lean pretty hard on the Razorbacks on the women's side to take home the title. But on the men's side, I think it's gonna be chaos. I don't think anybody's gonna score quite as many points as I've seen projected.
So Al, after all of that, at the end of the day, who do you think wins?
I think the Razorback women win, and I think I don't know. Gosh, I guess you got to go with the Ducks. Right now I'm feeling that.
Now moving on to another race, where another championship that will be taking place this weekend, the U.S. Marathon Championships, where we have Ryan Hall, Matt Yano, guys like on the women's side, we've got Janet Baucom, and then Sarah Hall making her debut. So we've touched on this when they announced the fields, but what are your guys' thoughts on who comes out on top this weekend after, you know, they announced these fields back in January, late January. We're now in early March. I think, obviously, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Ryan Hall. This week, I'll have a story on him, just to tease there. And, he, you know, what's interesting about him is that right after that half marathon, he may have spent a week or two in Flagstaff and then went all the way back to Ethiopia at altitude. The thing about Ryan Hall, and so the story is going to be how where this long journey that he's had since 2012 and how where he's at right now when we're less than a year away from the Olympics, Olympic trials. So I think the important thing to note about him going into LA this weekend is that it's going to be a different Ryan Hall. We can't expect the 204 Ryan Hall from before. We can't expect, and I would say we won't expect the 217 Ryan Hall that we got last spring. He's in relatively good shape. Everything is healthy right now. Last time I spoke to him, and he learned something from Boston. There's a workout that he did that was just dropped everyone's jaws, especially when he told me what it was before Boston. I won't share that because it's a nice little tease for the story. And he wasn't in the best shape going into Boston, or he thought he was. Then the first couple of miles, he feels the pain of that workout. So it's interesting. We'll see how Ryan Hall does this weekend. I'm going to say, will he get the win? That's what everyone's going to hope for. I'd say he's in 212 shape right now, which is a step up from his 217 from last year. Mitch, who are you going to be watching this weekend?
Probably not Ryan. I'm just kind of, I don't know. I was on such an emotional high in New York when I saw him win, and then everything else since then has just been kind of like, I feel like I'm a heroin addict and I'm chasing my first high, and I keep doing more and more blow, and I'm never going to get back to that point ever again. So I just kind of want to quit, you know? I want to go to rehab. I want to jump on to something else with my life. So I remember saying it way back when, but I'm excited to see Matt Lano's second marathon, or third. I actually don't remember.
Second.
Thank you. Because what is clouding my mind right now is Chicago, and I know I've put a lot of stock into him, and I'm pretty pot committed at this point, though I could just easily pull out and just say he won't run well, but I do think he's going to run well. I do think that he's learned a lot in his trials and tribulations, and there's a guy I just spent the last 30 seconds trying to claw through just a small database and just claw through the recess of my mind to see, has Scotty Bowse run a marathon? Because he was supposed to run the New York City one that was canceled, but I don't think he's ever run one. And so I might be wrong.
He's on the start list.
And if I'm wrong, disregard what I say next. But I'm excited to see him get out there finally. I just feel like he's been around forever, and I have always, for years, I've been saying that he should move. Really excited for his debut in the marathon. And it's come now, and I almost feel like I'm forgetting. So those two.
Yeah, I think, what was it? Scotty Bowes was like the youngest guy to like break both sub 4 and sub like 28 or something like that in the same season. I don't really have a lot of stock in this race. I'm actually surprised more people aren't running it because it is going to be a preview to, you know, the Olympic trials course. I'm not going to predict anybody because I hate to steal the wind out of the sails with this race. But it just feels like one of those races that this week we're going to see press releases and tweets that say people aren't running. It's just that time of the year where people push their limits too much and decide at the last second that they're hurt. And so I cannot commit to a winner right now. It's just one of those.
You know, it was just one interesting name that I kind of picked out just because I think, well, there was a New York Times story on him right after New York, and that's Stephen Shea, who is actually the fourth American in New York City. I mean, not that there were too many. He was behind Meb, Vail, Arcinaga, and then it was Stephen Shea. I thought that was just kind of interesting, and on that day, the conditions were horrible. He's got a sponsorship now, I believe, with Skechers. So don't sleep on Stephen Shea, who might put together something good, maybe a top five finish among the Americans. there are going to be like one or two Ethiopian runners there. So we have to kind of keep tabs on them. But the eyes will be on the U.S. championship. On the women's side, real quick, I'm going to take Janet Baucom. I mean, she's, since 2012, she's been pretty dominant. And she had those two back-to-back weekends where she ran half marathons earlier in the year. They were both 72 minutes or faster. I think if she's fit, she's got to be the favorite on the women's side. Obviously excited for Sarah Hall's debut. I actually don't even have any idea what to kind of put as like her projected marathon in her debut. I'm not even sure. Al, who are you excited for on the women's side?
I mean JVC is the clear favorite. You know, when she made the team in 2012, she kind of came out of nowhere, but I'm not surprised by anything she does. I think she has the most experience. I have no idea how fit she is, but I know she is can step up to the line and race really well. She's no longer an unknown and unexperienced. JVC, I'm definitely my lead.
So I'm going to go with someone. She's, again, like came out of nowhere, had a lot of press behind her, but then kind of like had some injury stuff, and then she spent some time writing a book. But she is, I don't know if she's from Texas, but I'm going to consider her a Texan, and so I have to like her a lot. It's Becky Wade. So she's someone I feel like, you know, she's run 230, but, you know, maybe runs like a 228, and then maybe in the conversation for the team. And so I really like that weird, like, purgatory period where, not purgatory period, but purgatory space where, you know, there's rumblings of her maybe like making a move for a spot for the team or hanging back and just having a good race. And so I would like to see her development here.
And you mentioned that team. We're going to move on to the next race now, and that it's going to be the NYC half, where we're going to see a little bit of a preview of some of those contenders that could try and make that Olympic team in the marathon. I'm talking Desi Linden. And the really interesting thing about this NYC half field on the women's side, we'll start with the women this time around, is that we have a really interesting mix of the track stars and then the spring marathoners. We got Sally Kipyego, the defending champ, coming back. Desi Linden is in this, you know, just as preparation for Boston. And we're also going to have, like, the international stars, like Bazuna Shteba is also going to be in it. Joyce Chepkurui is also in this. And then the track representation, as we mentioned before, with Kipyego, we've got Molly Huddle. So I don't know. If it comes down to a kick, you got to go with the track stars. If it's I don't know, if it's a race where the weather isn't that great, maybe the marathoners. I'm not entirely sure. Who am I excited for in this race? I'll go with, I guess, Desi Linden, because it'll be serve as somewhat of a litmus test for what we could expect in Boston. Yeah. I'll go with Desi Linden.
Who am I excited about? It's really, really hard for me to almost ever bet against Sally Kipyego. I just like her a lot. As a person, as a runner, she's tenacious and she's kind and she's going to kill people. And so I just like seeing her run fast. But if I have to say someone who I've been monitoring since she decided to consider making a run for the 10K at future championships, is Molly Huddle. I feel like there's so much hype behind a lot of prominent female distance stars right now. And she, you know, I'm not sure why there isn't more press behind her. It's kind of like the same thing with Aja Wilson. You know, they're both running out of their minds. They're both at the top of the world. And yet there just isn't a lot about them going on. And so I would like Molly to just kind of, you know, give the DX chop, tell everyone to suck it, and run disgustingly fast.
I think I agree with you entirely on that point about Molly. She's definitely one of those where she's taken the right approach to every distance that she's tackled, whether it's the 5K, the half marathon. I think it's the same thing we're seeing with someone like Kim Conley, and both definitely deserve more love just in general. Al, who are you looking forward to?
Man, yeah, Kipyego's got silver medals, but Huddle, you know, she's been unstoppable lately. You know, and her I don't know how much she's training with Sisson, but it seems like things are going well in that camp right now. Business Deba, I mean, you can't count her out. She's awesome. She's great. She's very familiar with running up there too. So I got to lean towards Kipyego, I guess, over Huddle, just because of the pure metal and all-out speed, I think. But I agree with the Huddle statement. The girl is unbeatable. Except Kipyego.
On the men's side, we've got pretty big stars with Ritz, Meb, Jeff Eggleston, Brett Gotcher, Abdi, Degenkamp. Unfortunate scratch by Chris Zielinski, which I'm upset about because, you know, I was really looking forward to this one. 65 was the target, and he just needed that to punch his ticket to the trials next year. So now it seems like he's probably going to have to go after, you know, grandma's half or something like that to get a qualifier. Again, we're going to see a pretty nice matchup between Meb and Ritz. And with something like that, it's how much stock you put into a race like this, because you could take Ritz this weekend over Meb, but then a month from now you'll take Meb over Ritz in the full marathon. But yeah, when I look at this field, I'm gonna be excited for, you know, guys like Steven Sambu and see how fast exactly he can put it all together. The international field is gonna have a good day. Leonard Carrier, Wesley Carrier, Steven Sambu, I think they're going to be pretty entertaining to watch, and we'll see how well someone like Ritz can hang on with them.
And this could just blow up my face, so who knows, but I said it when they announced the field, but I'm interested to see how Bumbalo does. You know, Ritz, Meb, just all those guys, even Caballo's an interesting guy too. Abdi's been there, you know, who knows, maybe 5 times to the Olympics, but Bumby's the kind of guy where he's just always he has found a niche, and then he like just is on the outside of really just breaking through. And so the half is an interesting distance for a lot of people, and I know he's only run like a handful of 10Ks. By handful, I just mean one, in 2013 at Stanford. So I would like to see what Jerry has up his sleeve for a guy. I mean, he ran a pretty speedy 3K this year, 7:51, and then was fifth at Millrose in the 5K, 13:28. So, you know, maybe he's just working on pure strength, pure guts right now. And yeah, the marathon debuts are always hard to gauge just because they're, you know, who knows how they'll go. But half debuts are, I like to see, because that means that they're doing the necessary strength work, which means it'll pay dividends come summer.
Just an additional point to my pick on Sambu, now that I come across it. Third place at that world's best 10K out in Puerto Rico. So he's rolling right now, and that's it's a good sign for at least for my pick. Al, who's your guy?
Well, you know, you mentioned Steven Sambu, but I don't know if we've talked about this and or how much it's been publicized or confirmed, but Lenny Carrier has also moved out to Tucson and is training with that crew, with James Lee's crew. So, you know, I think when you say Steven Sambu, I think you've got to include Carrier having a shot. We haven't seen a ton of him since NCAAs when he ran so well, but I think Sambu and Carrier are good guesses. I'm excited to see Eggleston. Eggleston doesn't have the track PRs like these guys. This might be a learning experience for him for sure. But good to see him mixed up with some of the big dogs. I saw a picture of Meb. He looks incredibly fit. He has like 20 abs. He put it up on Twitter the other day. But for some reason, Ritz is running really well. You know, Ritz is kind of like a different perspective on this year than he's had before. I don't know. I'm leaning towards picking Ritz, and just because he's so experienced in these sort of races. Bumby, Mitch, you brought Bumby up. I swear, in the 3K he ran a Husky. It was like his body. He was so fit, his body couldn't even like handle it. Like, he physically could not make his legs move any faster. So yeah, definite dark horse.
I like how none of us are taking Abdi, but there's just so many question marks that surround him. I mean, we haven't seen him since Boston last year, which didn't go so great. I think the big question we'll ask ourselves after this race is whether, you know, the end is near for the four-time Olympian. But, you know, that's, we'll save that for after this week. You know, we can't do anything but root for Abdi. Moving on, we're going to give some shout-outs to the fast times and stuff going on in Europe. So the European Championships are going on all weekend. Lee Emanuel with a silver medal in the 3K. That's as much as I was keeping tabs on. Mitch was very excited about something. Mitch, the pentathlon world record almost went down. Why were you so pumped?
Because Katarina Johnson-Thompson is the woman. And I think I was most excited because afterwards, she scored 5,000 points, and she missed the world record by 13. And afterwards, her first tweet was how she was so disappointed she missed the world record, but she just won gold at European Championships and set a world age group record. And so just to know that that person is upset with even with those accolades that she accomplished makes me just like her a lot. And it's crazy because now Britain has the reigning Olympic champion, the world junior champion Morgan Lake, and then this U23 world record holder and reigning European champion. So yeah, Britain's good at a lot of things. It just happens that all those events kind of condense into one. And then most importantly, well, not most importantly, the thing I had just scribbled down was that she would have gotten bronze in the high jump and silver in the long jump, just straight up. So, yeah, she's a talent, and she's got many years to come.
Well, NCAA hookups, O'Hare was third in the 1500, and I think the other things I wanted to mention were, Kilty wins the indoor title. Richard Kilty, his big rival in that race, actually false started. I think another guy from Great Britain. Kilty is really interesting, slightly controversial. I don't know if you guys remember some of his tweets and his social updates last year. I'll let that just simmer right there. Also, the big headline was that Russia won 8 gold medals on the last day. That's a lot.
One last thing to note, the men's 1500s went out in crazy fast fashion. We're talking world record pace, and Chris O'Hare ended up with a bronze medal. I think that's as much as I managed to keep tabs on. What I did keep tabs on Saturday morning was Alan Webb in Abu Dhabi making his world triathlon debut. He got the call up to the big leagues, and I think it was just because of a last-minute scratch from someone else. So it was really interesting to see him test these waters. Literally. And after the swim, he had a problem on the first transition, which cost him big time. And if you look at some of the analysis from that race, that first transition was the slowest of everyone. The first swim wasn't as fast as it probably should have been. But some of these guys who swam a second or two faster than him ended up going with the lead packs. So it's a little interesting because Alan Webb is kind of right there. If you think about 2 seconds, but then 2 seconds is a lot to make up on a swim. And then the transition, he's just got to make sure that everything goes well for him. So it was a little bit disappointing, but he managed to catch a few guys going into the run as expected. The winning 5K time was actually, I think, 14:04 was what the guy from Spain ran. Pretty fast. Gwen Jorgensen, it was actually really nice to see that she improved upon the run of all three of the disciplines. So she was in the Fifth Avenue Mile, I believe it was, or she ran one of the 5K. She ran the 5K, I think it was, right before NYC Marathon. So Gwen Jorgensen improving on the running. It's always nice to see. Guys, really quick question. With Alan Webb in the triathlon and getting this call up to the big leagues somewhat, does it kind of ignite somewhat of a fire within you to keep tabs on the triathlon?
Yes. I had slight interest in the triathlon before. It's just interesting to me in general. But I guess I more want to keep tabs on Alan because he's an incredible just person, an athlete. And gotten to know him, and he's just an interesting story for sure. Him and his wife actually just announced they're expecting a second child. So maybe that was on his mind. I don't know.
I like the try. I have a bunch of friends that do it. Is it going to really ignite my interest in it? I don't know. Not really. Just, I didn't even know it's if I can't watch it, if I can't have the convenience to watch it, it's hard for me to really get invested in it. So I wish Alan the best. Helmet something. But I think he's ranked 12th right now, and of the U.S. athletes, there's only two spots available, maybe three. I'm not sure how it works. So, hey, man, you got a few years. Or you got next year, and then a few years after that. So who knows?
Now, Mitch, you actually spoke to Craig Alexander for a bit, the world-renowned Ironman triathlete. Did you ask him at all what he thought about Alan? Because I spoke with him too, and he said it's something pretty interesting.
I did not. We kind of just focused on his career. This guy's the man. And so I like that I've said, like, it won't reignite my passion for triathlon. But Craig Alexander is the man. I don't have it in front of me, but he had the course record in Kona, and then he, like, retired, and then he came back, and then he broke it again. That's not right, so don't quote me on that. But look on the guy's Wikipedia page. He's the man. He's a real Aussie, and I like that about him. And yeah, he is, what, 41? And so when I say Alan got a few more years, you got a few more years, Alan, but not like Craig Alexander kind of years. So
cool. Yeah, when I spoke with Craig Alexander, he said that it was good that Alan was bringing this type of attention to the sport, and he's actually from afar rooting for him, so it's pretty good. Next topic that happened this week, pretty interesting because there's a couple question marks surrounding it. Out of nowhere, we hear the news that Karen Harvey resigned at Florida State. There wasn't an immediate reason given as to why. At this point, anything is speculation. But it's pretty interesting timing because it just happens right before NCAAs. I think to some degree, it might do something to Colin Quigley, not knowing, you know, this coach has been beside you this entire time. All of a sudden, it's gone for the big race. So I think that's a very odd point to everything. But question for you guys, and I know Mitch and Alex have had a bunch of experience with Coach Harvey through cross country. What do you think her best qualities are as a coach? And if she decides to take up a job somewhere else, what do you think it is about her? For me, I definitely think it's just the fire within Coach Harvey. I mean, there's just so much intensity that it's for only the strong to really handle. And those girls at Florida State are tough for being able to get through Karen Harvey's, you know, day-to-day program. Al, we'll go with you first.
I have only been able to sneak away to a couple coaching seminars. When I'm at the coaches convention every year, we're usually prepping for the show, but I made sure I went to Coach Karen Harvey's talk. And she is the woman to go to when it comes to knowing if girls dealing with being weak and being possibly having issues with eating and having issues with low bone density. She knows, she is the go-to person on that. Her knowledge with dealing with girls who are in that stage of their life and maybe struggling psychologically and have a weird issue and relationship with food. And she has all these charts and graphs and just great knowledge about how you should go about training and recruiting those high school girls, if you even should recruit or train that sort of girl, if you know she's possibly in that sort of situation. So her knowledge about that is unmatched. And I don't think, honestly, I don't think Quigley will be affected at all by this situation. I think she works with Coach Long a lot there at Florida State, and he'll still be there. And I don't think Quigley will be affected. I think Coach Harvey, say what you will, she'll be an incredible addition to anyone's staff.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful, Laura. I have nothing to add. You've covered everything. Even stuff that's controversial with her. So I think, yeah, I wonder what she'll do next. Not to say it's House of Cards-ish, but if someone puts in their letter of resignation, you know, right before the big season, and it gets accepted by whoever has to accept it, whether it's the athletic director or whomever, it's a big gamble to support your convictions and beliefs. So if she was in support of something and handed in her letter and it got taken away, good for her. She played her hand and she'll find something. She's good at what she does. She'll find something else.
Yeah, and just master recruiter, I think, is the one of the first things that everyone comes to mind when we think of Coach Harvey. So definitely wishing her the best of luck into whatever program happens to land her services next. So they've got someone good. Last topic before we get to our fun topic of the week is Mike Powell's long jump comeback, something that everyone was kind of pretty excited about. This 51-year-old, I believe it is, coming back with looking for a sponsorship, first of all, because he wants to get paid for long jumping. And he decides to open his outdoor season out in New Zealand. So he gets on a plane, flies however many so hours it was, definitely over 10. And, you know, there's this hype surrounding him, and he tightens up and is not able to jump. He actually said he wasn't able to walk right afterwards. Mitch, is 51 pushing it for a comeback?
No. Keep jumping till you're 150, for all I care. I saw a picture of him and, like, a bunch of school children laying on the ground, and he was long jumping next to them. That's how far he was, where his jump was, his world record. And I say, more of those sports. Have people jump over small children. Have people jump over small children. Or that's the same thing, I guess. Because over vertically is the same over horizontally. So, basically, in conclusion, yes, keep jumping, dude. I'll pay you some cash.
You guys, if you're a track fan and you have not watched the montage highlight of Carl Lewis versus Powell at the 91 World Champs, go on YouTube immediately and do it, because it is the 90s at its best, and it's unbelievable how far these guys are jumping. It's mind-boggling, and it has cheesy 90s music and graphics. It has like over 3 million views. Do it now.
Don't you guys think that it's funny to see, look down on a start list and maybe see this guy's name and says personal best 8.95, and it's like the most deceiving personal best. It's if El Garouge hops in a mile at an all comers meet and puts down his personal best nowadays. I feel like it's that much of a deception. And I don't know. I was rooting for him to, you know, at least make it to USA's. There's still time. There's still time for him to get that mark down. So we'll see. I mean, we haven't seen him jump since 2003. That's, what is that? That's 12 years ago. Jeez. Wow. So now let's move on to the final topic. So yeah, all the best to Mike Powell on his comeback. Maybe a little bit of a hiccup here, but that's what happens when you're on a plane for over 10 hours. P.S. Andrew Eating looks very fit with his 52-second lap out there, even though it was windy. So I guess that does it. And we were kind of all over the place with this week's episode. We'll try and be organized next week. Actually, we got to figure that out. I'm probably going to be on a plane that night heading back from Los Angeles. But thanks again for tuning in to episode 10 of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Be sure to rate, review us, and give us 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe. Yeah, it's a lot easier to just get these podcasts dropped on your iPhone without having to do it manually.
Or just put 1 star, but also put your address. So
yeah, do that. Yeah. All right. Thanks again for listening. Right. We'll catch you guys next week with a recap of all this action that we previewed.